Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Tuesday evening Dhamma class from Cross River Meditation Center on March 24th, 2020. This is the eighth week of our 12-week Truth of Happiness Dhamma study from Tuesday evening. This talk is on the five clinging aggregates. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.
So again, like I said earlier, we're in the eighth week or the eighth chapter of our Truth of Happiness Dhamma study. We spent two classes on dependent origination, and now we're going to spend two classes at least on the five clinging aggregates. Those of you, and I think all of you except maybe Sarah, went through the our 36-week Vipassana structured study of introspective insight into the three marks of existence, and specifically into where the Buddha's Dhamma resolves, which is within each and every individual, and how they develop that. And we develop the Dhamma where we are, as we find ourselves, and as described as five clinging aggregates. And that's going to become more clear, at least I hope it is. That's the point of this talk, Saturday's talk, and a few other talks when we're out of the Dhamma study on some sanghas, on some suttas that we haven't touched on yet. Dependent origination states that from ignorance, and a very specific ignorance, you remember, of ignorance of Four Noble Truths, through 12 observable causative links, all manner of stress and suffering arises. In the Buddha's description of the personal experience of suffering, he describes that as these five clinging aggregates: form, physical form, feelings, perceptions, mental fabrications, and consciousness. Now remember it, that's consciousness with a small c. It's simply ongoing thinking rooted in ignorance, and you could say framed by that ignorance of Four Noble Truths. So I'm going to refer back to the text in the book now, and if you're following along, I'm probably about 30%. I don't have page numbers on my Kindle. But the first chapter, or the first sentence in the paragraph is, it is important to remember. Now, if anybody's reading, you want to take a moment to try to find that, I'll give you a second. Take a sip. Okay. This is a page or two past where I stopped a couple weeks ago, if anybody bookmarked that. It is important to remember now that the teachings on dependent origination are given to develop understanding of the Four Noble Truths. And that makes complete sense to us, and it's completely lost on most modern Buddhist practitioners. One of the reasons is that when you read the suttas, you have to understand the context of what the Buddha taught in order to apply these teachings appropriately. But in order to do that, you actually have to read the suttas. And because there's not many sanghas around like ours, you can't just ask a straight question because you won't get a straight answer, because the answer then is not rooted in the truth of Four Noble Truths. They're in, I was thinking about this the last couple of days, the truths that humanity based their thinking on, and we can call it wrong thinking or developing wrong views, is based on relative truths, meaning an individual holds these things to be true to themselves. But what we're finding out through the Dhamma is that they don't have a relationship to Four Noble Truths. And I've been making that point recently, that we can say that the sky is blue, or I have the greatest dog in the world, or my car is a Prius. Those are all truths. Nobody could argue with those. Well, maybe about my dog, but you'd have a fight with me. But they're not noble truths. In other words, they don't relate to the Dhamma. So clinging to the fact that my Prius is red and trying to incorporate that somehow into my Dhamma practice is just a distraction. I'm using a ridiculous example, but basing the same belief that, well, I learned that 500 prostrations before I begin my meditation is the best thing for me to do to develop awakening, so I am compelled to do that. The 500 prostrations are true for me. I believe them. But they're not noble truths. They don't relate at all. In fact, they distract completely away from what the Buddha taught. If that's not clear, well, let me just say, is that not clear what the definition of Four Noble Truths is to anyone? And you could unmute your mic and just say you need more explanation? What a brilliant group. Okay. But that's it. That's what a noble truth relates to the Dhamma, and there's four of them. The sutta explains the process of how all personal phenomena arises so that understanding of the distraction of dukkha or stress and suffering can be realized. We gain the understanding that we're doing this to ourselves. It's not because we're lacking the right lineage. It's not because a god or gods aren't noticing us and pulling strings for us. It's not because we haven't developed enough merit in our so-called spiritual practice that we're suffering right now. We're suffering right now due to ignorance of Four Noble Truths. And that's as clear as I can be, and it's as clear as the Buddha can be on what his Dhamma is. If we want to develop the Dhamma, we understand the Dhamma through the five clinging aggregates and as those aggregates relate to Four Noble Truths. That's probably not very clear right now, but I hope it will be at the end of this talk, or at least by Saturday. Most of you understand this. The Dhamma teaches that right view, while pointing out that holding wrong or ignorant views is a cause of all confusion and suffering. The environment of anicca, dukkha, and anatta, the three marks, is not an arbitrary or chaotic environment from which there is no escape. It may seem like a very arbitrary and chaotic environment, especially now, but it is simply the ongoing environment of worldly conditions. It's what human beings live in, and there's nothing personal about the conditions of the world, including what we're going through right now, and including if I happen to find that I have the coronavirus, there's nothing personal about that, is there? Millions of people have it. It's not coming after me. And then once I might, well, let's pull that back a little bit to what we're doing today. The things that we're doing, like social distancing and washing our hands a lot and those types of things, are not self-referential, except in our intention. If it's rooted in fear that we're doing these kind of things, then there's a bit of self-reference that's going to create tension for us right now. If we simply realize that it is a practical as eating breakfast every morning. Again, remember the Buddha said that Buddha didn't say we don't need anything and we should strive for nothingness or emptiness. That's the mass confusion of modern Buddhism. The Buddha said that as human beings, we need four things. We need food, clothing, shelter, and medicine. He's not teaching a Dhamma that allows us to escape these worldly conditions or even the responsibility of the individual responsibility of taking care of ourselves. Many, many people are so frustrated with their lack of understanding of how to take care of themselves that they take up spiritual practice as an escape from that point of view. That I simply don't know what's going on and I need some help, I need some support, I need an outside agency or agencies to fix me or resolve me. When the Buddha realized the only thing that's wrong with us is wrong view. We don't understand who we are in relation to the world we live in, and that view is characterized as five clinging aggregates. Again, if anybody needs some clarity on what I'm saying, just unmute your mic and say, you need some clarity. Understanding dependent origination within the context of Four Noble Truths is a key to unbinding from the endless karmic entanglements caused by the desire to maintain a self. And we're going to get into karma and rebirth, I think it's next week. Now the Buddha describes how craving arises from feeling and how feeling is caused by contact. The Buddha's words. And this relates, you'll notice how this relates directly to dependent origination as well. And what is craving? There are six classes of craving. And notice how all of these classes of craving are rooted in the five clinging aggregates, and particularly the form aggregate. Craving for form, craving for sounds, craving for smells, craving for taste, craving for physical sensations, and craving for ideas. So that last is so important. It's ultimately clinging to the ideology I've developed about who I am in relation to the world that is resolved through the Dhamma. And that is related to that last, clinging to ideas, clinging to my ideology, clinging to the idea that there's some relative value in my red Prius as opposed to the true value of understanding the true nature of ignorance, and clinging to those. The more time and effort we put into something, no matter what it is, whether it's a modern religious or Buddhist practice, a set of guiding ideologies that we use to live in the world, hopefully in a more moral, ethical way, are simply distractions from what the Buddha taught as an Eightfold Path. The morality that many people feel is necessarily provided through religion. That's the argument given by some people for religion, is that we need religion to maintain order in the world. In other words, if we didn't have fear-based morality, meaning I'm afraid to act in an immoral way because I might be punished for it, is no way to live as a liberated human being, is it? But that's the argument for religion from many people, that if we didn't have religion, people would just devolve into horrible behavior. We develop moral and ethical behavior because we understand that it is aberrant and contrary to the Eightfold Path to act in any other way. It's not because God or gods are going to bless us because we're not stealing or yelling at people or whatever else it might be. We do it because we understand that's what an awakened human being acts, through understanding, not fear, not from an outside agency working on us. We do it because we do it out of understanding. We live the way we're living without fear, with a mind fully integrated with its body, through understanding. That's a significant difference. And it's the reason why the Buddha studied religion while he was seeking understanding and rejected all of the religious practices and religious ideologies of his time, not because they were bad or wrong in that sense. They were simply irrelevant. They weren't noble truths. They didn't relate to the truths. The Buddha continues, and what is feeling? Feeling has six classes as well. Feeling arising from eye contact, from ear contact, from nose contact, from taste contact, from body contact, and from intellect contact. So that is how the Dhamma is practiced. It is at this point of contact with our six senses. And remember, those six senses are either informed by ignorance or informed by wisdom. When those six senses are informed by ignorance, they can only create an ignorant response, and so ensure further craving for and clinging to ignorant experiences rooted in ignorance and ideologies. Again, that last line, clinging to ideas, is a key to understanding the Dhamma. As we start to quiet our minds and develop concentration, we'll notice that the things that we're struggling most with on our cushion and off our cushion are the things that we're clinging to. That may not be readily apparent, and we'll talk a little bit more about this next week in the context of karma and rebirth. But it is in this moment that we are giving birth to whatever we're going to experience, and what we're giving birth to is informed and motivated by what we're holding in mind. And if what we're holding in mind is the mindfulness developed through the Eightfold Path, the right view developed through the Eightfold Path, then in this moment, this thing called the five clinging aggregates is going to give birth to a moment rooted in understanding and geared towards awakening and geared away or focused away from the stress and suffering rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. And it occurs right within form, feeling, perceptions, mental fabrications, and ongoing thinking. As a Dhamma practitioner is experiencing this and understanding the notion of contact with the physical senses, it is at that point that we can start undoing our perceptions. And as we start undoing our perceptions, mental fabrications fall away. As mental fabrications fall away, our consciousness becomes more and more pure. There's actually an emergence of purity within our own minds by doing the house cleaning we need to do within the framework of the Eightfold Path. Is that clear to everyone? We clear our minds of the detritus of ignorance through the Eightfold Path. That's how it works. And that the detritus is carried around by this vehicle known as the five clinging aggregates. Okay. The Buddha continues, and what is contact? Phenomena contacting the eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the body, and the intellect. This is contact with the sixth sense base. And what is name and form? Name and form is the English translation of the Pali phrase namarupa, which means name and form. It also means anatta. It also means the five clinging aggregates. We'll learn next week it also means karma. Karma is the ongoing feeling and experience of the five clinging aggregates and wrong views of self known as anatta. And what is name and form? Feeling, perceptions, intention, attention, meaning all mental aspects, I mean, the things that are floating around in our minds, and contact. Let me read it again. What is name and form? Feeling, perceptions, intention, attention, all those mutual aspects, and contact. Discriminating consciousness is name. Again, think about that. We're applying a name to our thinking, but that's exactly what we do, isn't it? I've given a name to this form. And I've attached a way of thinking to this form that I call consciousness. This form is called John Haspel. And as I live my life and develop wrong views of what John Haspel needs and wants and hopes to project into the world, that becomes my ignorance. That becomes my karma. Again, we'll get into this a little more next week. That becomes my flinging, I wish I could fling them around. My clinging aggregates. I've created this. Does everybody see that?
Yes.
And the importance of that is because I've created this thing called form, feeling, the five clinging aggregates out of form, out of feelings, out of perceptions, out of mental fabrications, out of consciousness, means that I can undo the process of clinging these things together. And it's because of ignorance of Four Noble Truths that I've done so. So wisdom, understanding of Four Noble Truths, will allow for me the process of unclinging these things, these aggregates. And so then the form is just a form. A perception is just a perception. When I recognize a fabrication, I recognize it as simply foam on the ocean. It's not something I'm clinging to anymore. Excuse me. And I let it go. And as I recognize and abandon all manifestations of ignorance of Four Noble Truths, the fifth aggregate, I'm going to say the same thing twice, the fifth aggregate then emerges as pure. And I'm using something I may not have said often, is the emergence of a pure mind, but that's exactly what we're doing. Because, and I'm not pointing to some type of hidden Buddhahood or Buddha nature, that's nonsense. It's not something the Buddha ever taught, and it contradicts everything the Buddha taught to believe that. But we know simply by taking true refuge, and we talked about this a little bit last week, that this is something that human beings can do. How do we know that? Because a human being did it, and that human being taught us how to do it, and we have a sangha that's well-informed and well-focused so that we can do the same thing. Recognize and abandon all wrong views, all views rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, all ignorant views that manifest within five clinging aggregates. Let me continue a little bit more. Discriminating consciousness is name. The elements of water, fire, earth, and wind that makes up physical form is called forms. Name and form is discriminating conscious bound to or clinging to physical form. I believe this is me. And so once I make that self-identification, then every thought that follows from that ignorant thought is rooted in that same ignorance. And so I need something. I need a structure to recognize and abandon that thinking. That's what the Eightfold Path is about. And that's what all the authentic teachings of the Buddha's Dhamma are for, that single purpose. To resolve the issue of wrong views of self clinging to the world that it's in. And again, we got into that deeply with the 36-week course on Vipassana. The Buddha continues, and what is consciousness? There are six classes of consciousness: eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness, and intellect consciousness. So the Buddha's relating something that we see in a very confused way, kind of like this amorphous, we see consciousness as this amorphous blob that is somehow spiritual in nature, physical in nature, godlike in nature, foolish in nature. We apply every attribute we can to consciousness and call that amalgamation of views and ideas, wrong views and wrong ideas, as consciousness. When when consciousness cannot be defined in that way, consciousness is from an awakened point of view, is merely a reference point, an individual reference point to what's occurring during a human life. Does everybody get that? It's a dispassionate reference point. It's what we truly are as awakened human beings. We simply are then a reference point to what's occurring, but a reference point imbued with great wisdom and understanding that understands at a profound level what's occurring. This individual, this human being with a mind united in its body and seeing things clearly from right view, is free of stress, free of confusion, free of greed, free of aversion, free of any type of deluded thinking that would insist that what's occurring right now must be different than it is, including what's occurring right now. And we had such a wonderful discussion about this, how we're all diminishing the personalization of COVID-19 as best we can and in our own way. That's one of the things I was thinking about this much of the day Saturday, how we are all applying the same Dhamma, but in very, very individual and practical ways to our own experience of five clinging aggregates. And that really is remarkable. That's how the Dhamma is seen as a truly skillful and useful path, because it directly addresses the problems that we face moment by moment, especially right now. Let me continue. I'm going to skip ahead if anybody's reading just a page or two. And what the Buddha continues, and what are fabrications? There are three fabrications. There's bodily fabrications, verbal fabrications, and mental fabrications. My commentary here. All three fabrications are caused by a wrong view of self. Fabrications result in a personality bound to physical form that is perceived as I or me. And now the Buddha describes ignorance. Somebody asked me a while ago, and I can't remember who it was. I remember now. It was Eva. And to describe ignorance, this is so important to understand, because the Buddha is not teaching that we're ignorant as human beings. He's teaching us very specific ignorance. And what is ignorance? Ignorance is not knowing stress. That relates to the First Noble Truth. Ignorance is not knowing the First Noble Truth. Ignorance is not knowing the origination of stress. That relates directly to the second noble truth, that wrong views of self originate, and clinging to those views perpetuates ongoing stress and suffering. Not knowing the origination of stress, not knowing the cessation of stress, the third noble truth, and not knowing the eightfold path leading to the cessation of stress. The Buddha concludes that by saying, this is called ignorance. If there was any other ignorance that the Buddha wanted to address, he would have here in this statement or in any of the other statements. This is the only definition the Buddha ever gave to ignorance. It's the only definition he gave to the initiating factor of dependent origination of ignorance as a requisite condition giving rise to fabrications. It is the primary, and you could say the fundamental issue of the Buddha's Dhamma, is ignorance. Resolving the issue of ignorance of Four Noble Truths. A good way of understanding if what you're coming in contact with outside of the Buddha's Dhamma relates is to simply ask that question. Does this relate in any way to developing understanding of Four Noble Truths? If it doesn't, it's simply a distraction from the Buddha's Dhamma. I'm going to continue. The Buddha brings his teachings back to his first teaching on the Four Noble Truths, again, reminding us that it is ignorance of Four Noble Truths that we're resolving in Dhamma practice, and teaches that from ignorance of Four Noble Truths comes all confusion and suffering. Gaining understanding of the Four Noble Truths is true wisdom. Wisdom brings an end to ignorance and an end to the distraction, confusion, and suffering caused by ignorance and the delusion of an independently arisen self. When all ignorance is abandoned, awakening arises. The Buddha continues, now from the remainderless fading and cessation of ignorance comes the cessation of fabrications. You'll notice that the Buddha is teaching us how to undo the process rooted in ignorance resulting in stress and suffering. I'm going to say that first line again. From the cessation of fabrications comes the cessation of consciousness. Of course, the Buddha is not saying that when we end our fabrications, we lose the ability to think. Remember the context. It's simply consciousness rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths that we lose. So let me read it again. From the cessation of fabrications rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths comes the cessation of consciousness rooted in the ignorance of Four Noble Truths. So again, a fresh and pure consciousness is emerging from the cessation of fabrications, fabricated views. From the cessation of that type of consciousness comes the cessation of name and form. Another phrase for name and form is self-referential views. So let me read it that way. From the cessation of consciousness comes the cessation of self-referential views, the cessation of name and form. And where does that resolve? Within the five clinging aggregates. From the cessation of name and form, from the cessation of self-referential views, comes the cessation of the sixth sense base. Of course, the Buddha is not teaching that when we resolve ignorance, we lose the ability or we lose our six senses. At that point, our six senses are no longer interpreting what we're coming in contact with from a view rooted in ignorance. At that point, our senses are coming in contact and interpreting that contact from great wisdom and understanding. And so the same experience is experienced completely different. In one case, it's experienced as stress-inducing, even if it's something that makes us feel good. In a mind rooted in ignorance, that just engenders more grasping. To a mind developing the Dhamma, it brings great peace and understanding in this moment within the five clinging aggregates. From the cessation of the sixth sense base comes the cessation of contact. Again, from the cessation of the sixth sense base rooted in ignorance comes the cessation of contact rooted in ignorance. Contact still occurs, obviously. It's just no longer interpreted by a mind rooted in ignorance. From the cessation of that type of contact comes the cessation of feeling and reacting to feelings informed by ignorance. From the cessation of feeling comes the cessation of craving. When I'm no longer reacting to what's occurring, whether by more craving or more aversion, there's two sides of the same coin, when I'm not reacting to it, then the feeling is just a feeling. And any thought attached to that feeling or informing a feeling is just a thought. This is the depersonalization and creating a dispassionate stance in the world within the five clinging aggregates, within the vehicle that once caused us great confusion, delusion, and ongoing stress and suffering. We are now able to develop a calm and peaceful mind. From the cessation of craving comes the cessation of clinging and maintaining ultimately to fabricated views. From the cessation of clinging and maintaining fabricated views comes the cessation of becoming further ignorant. From the cessation of becoming further ignorant comes the cessation of giving birth to another moment rooted in ignorance. From the cessation of giving birth to another moment rooted in ignorance comes the cessation of sickness, aging, death, sorrow, pain, distress, despair, and confusion. Wisdom brings a cessation to the entire mass of stress and suffering known as the five clinging aggregates. This, again, that last paragraph, from the cessation of birth comes the cessation of the whole manifestation of stress and suffering. Of course, the Buddha is not teaching that the wisdom developed through the Eightfold Path somehow magically means that we'll never be sick, we'll never age, we'll never die, we'll never be disappointed. It simply means we'll stop taking these things personally because they aren't. Every human being that has a life right here, right now, has had a birth. They will have sickness. They'll age. They'll die. They'll be disappointed along the way. And that whole process is called the five clinging aggregates. So I think I'm going to stop there too. Give me 1 second. Excuse me. So, and maybe we can talk about this if it's not clear. What the five clinging aggregates describe is simply the ongoing personal experience of stress and suffering rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. Five Noble Truths, if you want to know what the five Noble Truths are, look in the mirror, because the five Noble Truths are who we think we are. The truth of the matter is we aren't that. We aren't somebody clinging to form, clinging to our perceptions, clinging to our fabrications, and clinging to an ongoing way of thinking that is rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. What we are as human being is a form that, as an awakened human being, is informed by a liberated consciousness that understands what's occurring. And so the perceptions that follow within that form are rooted in wisdom. And that form, perceiving reality, no longer creates fabrications based on feelings, because that person is no longer reacting to feelings or fabricated thought. And so the mind emerges as pure and is maintained pure, as pure, through continued Dhamma practice. And again, I know I've said this a few times. I got a question a few years ago, and I'm so glad I got the question from an online student. He said, why did the Buddha keep meditating after he awakened? Why wouldn't he? He established that profound refuge through jhana meditation within himself. And so he continued to meditate like we all do as we awaken. And we continue to cultivate the Eightfold Path as our way of living in the world, as our way of freeing ourselves from the five clinging aggregates. That's tonight's talk. Thank you. I think I'll start on the bottom right on my screen because I started top left last time. But if any of you have a comment that you'd like to make as we go around the room, just unmute your mic and say hello. We'll start with Sarah, and I'll just unmute your mic if I can. Oh. There you are. Hi, Sarah. How are you?
Hello. I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Thanks for asking.
I'm just trying to figure out the technology here.
Well, you got, at least I can hear you. There you are. Hi, Sarah. So what did you think of our tonight's talk?
Oh, I was very dispassionate about it.
Does it make sense to you? Is it useful information?
Yeah, it does, because the more that I don't think that it's really apathetic, but the more that I don't care about things, the more it doesn't bother me. Things don't bother me. Yeah. And it's a beautiful place to be. And I find myself sometimes being there and not realizing why it is that I'm so peaceful.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. The establishment of the Dhamma within each individual is so the application of it is so radically different, yet the Dhamma is always the same, isn't it? It's And so we're able to develop or apply the Dhamma in very subtle and profound ways as individuals, but there's nothing that escapes the Dhamma. There's nothing that the Dhamma isn't applicable towards. So thank you for joining us. You did well tonight too, Sarah. And I should say, anybody feels like they don't want to participate, you don't have to, but I'm glad you all do. And I wanted to say something earlier. When our session ends and I stop the recording, I'll leave the room open so we can continue a little bit of virtual social, not distancing. Okay, just so you know, that's coming up. Tim, good to see you. I'll leave you all to unmute your mics. I think it's easier that way. How are you, Tim?
Hey, everybody. Good evening. Good to see everybody. The five clinging aggregates, you know, I always, we kind of go over dependent origination. It's quite clear where the aggregates fit in and how they manifest in suffering, to the result of suffering.
Yeah.
And just understanding that where that ego comes from, and I think in these times that we're living in right at this moment, we can see them percolating up. The self-referential feelings that fit the existence of me, of I, and the fear that it may possibly go away from a disease, brings those aggregates to the forefront. And so, to me, this experience that we're all going through is actually it's a terrible thing, but terrible things happen all the time in every generation. But this is something that I had a conversation with some very good friends about how, and I don't know how anybody feels about this. Maybe this is coming from a wrong view, but I don't think it is. You know, aversion, or things that happen to us that aren't necessarily good, that are painful. And what I mean by painful in regards to, Dukkha. we tend to gain more understanding when we get through it. And by applying, the Dhamma is making a lot more sense to me while experiencing this from day to day. Each day. Yeah. It makes a lot more sense, and it really resonates on how the structure really can keep you grounded and calm and not reactive.
Yeah.
And I don't think I experience that when things are good in life. I'm not saying I want to have bad things happen later. That's why I don't want to go down a rabbit hole. But the understanding is more clear while going through this experience.
Yeah. Thank you, Tim. Yeah, I mean, it's usually the more extreme events that we kind of remind ourselves to practice the Dhamma in general. But I've also noticed that many people are, a good portion of people are finding it much too difficult now. I mean, I've had online students say this, that things are just too difficult now to practice the Dhamma. But that is a mind that's rooted in ignorance and fear, that is attaching itself to other minds rooted in fear and using that. This is the time. And that's what the Buddha said, ehipasiko, meaning during life, as life occurs, is how we practice the Dhamma. And we're all finding such great benefit and not losing our minds over what's occurring. It's still occurring, isn't it, to all of us? You know, we're living in the same world everyone else is, but we're not losing our minds over it. That's not to say everybody that's not a Dhamma practitioner is losing their minds, but we're not, and we're seeing things clearly. Life occurs, it's always been like this. Coronavirus is just one aspect of the First Noble Truth. Stress and suffering occurs, and so we make mindful decisions based on that. Thank you, Tara. I'm glad you joined us. Karen, good to see you. How are you? All right, let me unmute your... There you are. Hello, Karen.
Hi, how good... are you, everybody? How's good... everybody doing?
I'm good. How's everybody doing? They're all muted. It's good to see you. I'm glad you joined us tonight.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here, too.
How are things up in Hudson?
Oh, well, you know, it's quiet.
Yeah.
It's quiet and, you know, quite peaceful. It's an interesting time, right?
Yeah.
A lot of time to contemplate,
yeah,
you know, what's going on. So I've had a lot of time to practice various things and take long walks and connect with friends. And it's been interesting, but it's... I haven't had any fear about it.
Yeah, good
for you. So I suppose maybe I'm not taking it personally.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. So I liked what you talked about tonight. It's not a subject that I've given a lot of thought to, the five aggregates. Not something I've really thought a lot about. So I think I'll just listen and absorb more.
Yeah, good. Thank you for joining us, Karen.
Sure.
Have you heard anything new about the after the 19th?
I haven't heard anything yet.
Good.
So, you know, so far so good, but
Yeah, we'll see what happens. You know, at least we have a fall date if we can't make the spring date, so that's good.
Exactly.
I'm glad you joined us.
Thank you.
I'll see you online soon.
Okay.
How are you, Matt?
Hey, John. Hey, everyone. Good to see everybody here tonight. A couple things. One, I was just taking some notes and taking some notes on the Fena Sutta as well. You know, and when we say from the cessation of fabrications comes the cessation of consciousness rooted in ignorance, it makes me think of this line from the Fena Sutta about the magician's trick.
Yeah.
And the magician's trick is a lot like the trick about the snake and the rope. So, you know, you're going along and you go out to the barn and you open the door and there's the coil of rope that you left there 10 years ago. Well, at first glance, it looks like a coiled up snake ready to get you. And as soon as we see with, you know, what the Fenasutta says, with clear vision, one with clear vision, meaning right view, sees the fabrication for what it is. So in that second of extreme aversion to seeing a snake, with clear vision, you see, oh, actually, that's not a snake. That's just that old rope that I left there.
Yeah.
So that's also really speaking of who we think we are. You know, am I this body, am I this form, this feeling, this thought, this fabrication, this consciousness? Or is that just the magician's trick? Is that just the appearance of something rooted in ignorance?
Yeah.
So.
Beautiful. Thanks for bringing that in, Matt. And we're the magician. We're playing a trick on ourselves, and it goes right back to the beginning of dependent origination. From ignorance as a requisite condition come fabrication. Fabrications are just that. It's we make it up. We're the fabricator. We're the fabricator of our entire lives, in the sense that we're the fabricator of the experience of our lives. None of us make. We're not in charge of whether we have a human life, but we are in charge of how we experience that human life. And again, not to get into any esoteric questions about the formation of human life. That's what we can do. We can have that impact on ourselves each and every moment of how we're going to experience this moment. And that is described as five clinging aggregates. It's up to us. We can have, as Matt was describing, we can have a calm and peaceful mind rooted in understanding of what's occurring each and every moment. All we have to do is develop an Eightfold Path and know that we have that direct experience. Tim was touching on that a little bit. It's up to us to do it. Thank you, Matt. Frank, it's good to see you tonight. How are you?
It's good to be here. I'm here with Eric.
Hi, Eric.
I wish everybody health and being well. It's a great time for this sutta, or for this chapter on dependent origination and the five clinging aggregates. I personally, it has helped me in the last 2 weeks. We have closed our bakery.
Oh, you did?
And we don't know how long it's going to be closed. And as this conscious mind is constantly being fed through fabricated views, sometimes rooted in ignorance, and sometimes informed by wisdom, they all create feeling, and through contact with the news, with people in your family, with people you see on the streets, people you talk to on the phone. So the consciousness that's fed through I knows, everything, all that conscious contact, there's a lot of information to process, and it's just been a great teaching to remind myself that the cessation is possible.
Yeah.
And it's been, it's been very informative and helpful. And I just want to say thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Frank. Thanks for joining us tonight. And that is that third noble truth. Is the Buddhist teachings on hope, isn't it? Because this is what we can hope for. We know that it's possible to do this. And so it's not some vague faith-based hope. It's hope based on, if I put my time in and put my right effort in, this is what will occur. And thank you for sharing that. Eric, you have anything you'd like to share tonight?
No, it's just good to still have the class, even though the time here is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Good time to deepen my understanding with what's going on.
Yeah, it is. I'm glad you joined tonight, both of you. Kevin, how are you? There you go.
Hello, everybody. Good to see everybody. Really appreciate this talk, John, and all of you in the Sangha for continuing to join in. And I liked what Tim had said, and also what Matt had said, and Tim and I have sort of talked about this before, And I liked what he said about moments of uncertainty and such as what we're experiencing now as a way to really slow things down and really see that magician's trick that happens in daily life. And when the Buddha describes dukkha, and as we've also described it as being distraction, in a lot of the, in the way the world is set up to further ignorance, you know, when we have those positive experiences, there's no restraint, there's no pause. There's just, you're taught from a very young age to soak it all up, to enjoy every moment, to keep eating from that buffet table, right? And we don't get to really see the eye making and how subtle it is because of associations, because of attachments, because of fabrications that, and they can't even come from inside your family, even from very close associations. You know, your fabrications are propped up through distraction, and that really, that subtle magician's trick. I really like what Matt broke that out. And Tim and I have talked about this through associations and hobbies and things that we do. It's harder to see the attachment there. So I liked that. Thank you.
Brilliant, Kevin. Thank you. Anthony, how are you tonight?
I think I just unmuted my mic.
I hear you.
Okay, good. yeah, I'm doing good. Thank you. And thanks for the teachings. And I've been cutting back on coffee and cutting back on the news. And I'm trying to look at this as a more peaceful period of time. I agree completely with Sarah that when you're able to be dispassionate about things, that it actually starts to almost become a little more contagious, where it's easier to continue to be dispassionate.
Yeah.
And like the way that you describe consciousness, like I think that I experience that when I'm able to pull away and see the person who might be clinging to forms or feelings or fabrications or perceptions. And then when you're able to do that, you can distance yourself from that aggregate that you might be clinging to in that moment. And that to me is how it makes it possible to continue to deal with challenging situations like the one that we're in right now.
Yeah, that's right.
So thank you for the teaching tonight.
You're welcome, Anthony. Thank you for joining with us tonight. Lorna, how are you? There you go.
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you, John. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good.
We've missed you. I haven't seen you in a little while.
I know. I've been hiding. yeah, when you look at the five clinging aggregates like we have done tonight, you can see that you always have a choice in life.
Yeah.
You can either go down the Buddha path and understand the five clinging aggregates and that you're personalizing life. Or you can get caught up in life and understand the five clinging aggregates the wrong way and personalize life. And you always have that choice. It's always there.
That's brilliant, yeah.
And that choice is, like I say, it's hope and it's understanding, but it's not always easy to see. At the moment in time, you know, we get caught up in life, it's not easy to see. But if you can just understand that you do have that choice, that alone, in your quieter times, you can get comfort from that.
Yeah. True refuge.
I particularly like your explanation of the consciousness. Consciousness is a difficult thing to understand.
Yeah.
And I think you explained that very well today as well. So that was good.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Lorna. I'm never ever going to let you say again that you're having a tough time with the Dhamma because you explain it beautifully. You really do.
Thank you. That's it.
And it really is just that simple. Lorna's describing what we talk about all the time. It's right here, right now. It's at the point of contact that we practice the Dhamma. And so if in this moment I'm seeing things clearly, I understand who I am in relation to the world, this is a peaceful moment, no matter what's occurring, no matter what's emerging in the world, no matter what I might hear, I maintain a calm and peaceful mind. Thank you, Lorna.
Thank you.
Let me go with Julia. How are you, Julia? Hello, Julia. There it is.
Sorry. Hi, John.
How are you?
Good, and yourself?
I'm good. I'm good.
I'm happy to be here again. I wrote this very long thing, but I'm not going to read all of this. But this is my understanding of the aggregates. It's the first three, like feeling, perception, form, feeling, and perception. It feels like it's almost like an automatic thing that kind of happens. It takes a really skilled mind, to stop the next stage where fabrications and consciousness, where consciousness actually takes control and creates a story.
Yeah.
It's the story. It's where our mind becomes compulsive and tells a story. At that point, where the mind goes amok. And so with this virus, we could, our minds go amok and start telling, well, it's a virus, it's contagious, it's global, and so on all the other stories that we tell ourselves. If at this point we could just take a pause, if we can recognize, say, hey, my mind is telling a story right now, I need to stop. This is a story that's not, at this present moment, is not true. It's not what we're being affected. There's nothing here that's being affected. I'm in peace. I'm at home. I'm safe. Everything is great. It's good. So why am I creating a story that may not ever come true? So I think it's at that point, and I think that jhana meditation, I feel like, well, if we're telling ourselves this story and we're homebound anyway, hey, we can meditate more. Just meditate more. Do more meditation.
Yep.
Don't let yourself go crazy, sit down for 10 minutes in the middle of the day or whatever, take more time for jhana so that we can actually create more space.
Yes.
And equanimity in our mind and not run amok with our thoughts. That's all I have to say. But
that's a lot, Julia.
I've been thinking of it.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Michael, how are you?
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good.
I just scribbled some notes down here. I'm going to try to form them from make something out of this foam that I have on this paper here.
Okay.
But as far as the aggregates go and the way I kind of understand them, they are basically our self-identification and the way we react, to life as it occurs. But the main thing I get from them, and they're void of substance. They're void of substance and their emptiness. There's nothing substantial in them to hold on to grasp, or to self-identify with. As form is foam, perceptions are a mirage, feelings are a bubble, fabrications are the banana tree, not good for the hardwood, and consciousness is a magician's trick. And that magician's trick, that sleight of hand, makes us look at the world with wrong view. And wrong view leads to a distracted mind. And a distracted mind keeps us from liberation of the mind. And I just, marked down a couple of pages a little bit, further down than where we are, that relates to that. On page 244 of the book, midway through, abandoning craving for existence and clinging to form is enlightenment. The distraction of preoccupation with dukkha is lifted and awakened view arises. Again, it's distraction. It's things that distract the mind. Again, on page 251, I believe it is. I don't know, I'm going a little bit ahead of this, but 251, it is the constant preoccupation and distraction of dukkha that obscures liberation and freedom. Okay? And again, it's when one does not cling, one is not agitated. Agitation is also a distraction. When one is not agitated, one attains nibbana. It's all the distractions that occur from our, us craving and clinging to hold on to a self-identity in an impermanent world, in an ever-changing world. So once the mind, once we can understand what the aggregates are, in actuality, aggregates are anatta. It's the not self. It's not who we are. We identify with them, but we have to push them back and realize that that's not who we are. Take a pause and realize that that's not who we are. And that's in that way, disenchantment will grow with them, and dispassion, and that is clarity for the mind. That the mind becomes less distracted, and we're able to think clearer, and make headway in the Dhamma, I believe.
Wow, boy. Well said, my friend. I mean, and again, it's another clear presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma. He did well. Jane, how are you tonight? There you are. Hello, Jane.
Hello. Well, first of all, I feel a little bit guilty because I'm enjoying seeing all the faces, which I normally don't get to see when I'm online. So, and also, I didn't have to go first today, like I always do.
Give you a break.
I think early on in the talk, you said something about housekeeping. And
I'm sorry.
Made a good analogy for me. I'm thinking of my mind that's clinging to the aggregates. It's kind of like my messy house. I mean, I've been there for 40 years, and I've accumulated lots of stuff that I'm kind of clinging to. And at any moment, I can go and throw that stuff away. I can clean, you know, house clean. That's kind of, it's the same thing with my mind. You know, at any time, I can go to my Dhamma practice and get rid of that clutter.
Yeah.
It's a good analogy for me.
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful, too, that we've all created that in ourselves? That's, you just described a true refuge, you know, because it is. Thank you, Jane.
It's up to me. I can do it.
Yeah, that's right. And who'd have thought? I mean, really, that we can all do this, you know, and we are. Thank you. Ram, how are you tonight? Can you unmute your mic? I'm going to try it again then. Okay. There you are. Hello, Ram.
Hey, guys. Girls. How's it all going? I heard you say somebody had told you that it was too hard a time to be practicing the Dhamma.
Yep.
And frankly, there is no better time than now. Both to see, you know, what other people are going through and what their stuff is, but really it highlights where your own clinging and aversions are and your delusions are right now. You finally get, you know, you can't escape them anymore. You can't sweep them under the rug anymore. They're right there in your face.
Yeah.
And this is the time to practice and to finally abandon some of that stuff.
Yeah.
But that's what we've got for now.
Thank you, Ram. Yeah, this is a great time, a great opportunity to practice. And we're all doing it. And this venue works very well, I think. It does work well for you, this virtual sangha. To me, it's remarkable. And all of what you're talking about is the Dhamma. You know, I was kind of blown away by our last few classes. Obviously, there's more people now joining, but how each and every one of you is applying the Dhamma in this situation where a great portion of the world is losing their minds and we're not. And so in that way, it's what I always say, that the most loving thing we can do for ourselves and others is to take to the Dhamma and awaken. And so, you know, we can, in our own small way, we'll be a stabilizing influence for others, but most importantly, we'll be a stabilizing influence for ourselves and our families, you know, and that's really what's going to get us through as a country, I think too. But well done. There was something else I was going to say. I can't think about it. Yeah. We'll finish yes.
There was one thing I wanted to say, since we were talking about housekeeping earlier. You mentioned you want to know what the five clinging aggregates are. Look in the mirror. And you said you switched something up there. So that's all. Just going to say, if you go back on the tape, you said five noble truths.
Did I?
Yeah.
One of these days I'll figure this out.
I need to Ananda on that one. So for the record, we have it. We were talking about the five clinging aggregates are in the mirror.
Yes, thank you. we'll finish with Meta. And then I'm going to end the recording, but we'll keep the meeting room open so
Rob,
we can...
Rob heard it that way too, so he's on the Buddhist Council, so we got that fact check right.
Thank you. The Buddha's words on Meta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class tonight. Peace.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support the continued restoration, preservation, and presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma. If you find benefit here, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.